For Illinois Newsroom, I'm Jim Meadows, and here's an interview with Kerry Wolf, recorded on February 11th. He lives in the Effingham County town of Altamont, where he serves as vice president of the school board. Wolf is one of four Republican candidates for the March 17th primary in Illinois' 15th congressional district, which covers much of eastern and southeastern Illinois. Well, Kerry Wolf, thank you for joining us. First question I had is, why did you decide to run for Congress in the 15th District? You're already holding an elected office. You're vice president of the school board in Altamont.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Why Congress?
That's a great question. Probably to understand that, you have to know that growing up, I was around people that were in leadership things in the community. I was active in 4-H and FFA. I saw Dad being involved in Mid-America Dairymen as a board of directors. My grandfather was involved in church things. My uncle was in Farm Bureau. So I saw these people in leadership roles. As my adult life progressed, I'm that guy that when something needs to be done, like, hey, Kerry, your daughter's in soccer, but there's no coach. Can you step up and help out? I'd raise my hand and say, yeah, I'll learn soccer, and we'll figure out how to help coach the team. Or in Altamont, we have four Lutheran churches that together run a Lutheran grade school, K through 8. And when we moved home in 2010, it didn't take long before our congregation came to me and said, hey, Kerry, we're getting ready to nominate our people for the board of directors at the school. Will you serve? And so, sure, I'll do that. Same thing with school board after I finished on the Lutheran board. Four openings came up, and I thought, you know, we need somebody to help keep our school system on track. So I raised my hand and ran for office. When Congressman Shimkus decided to retire, I didn't think too much about it at first. I was kind of disappointed. But then two people jumped in who didn't turn in signatures. Following that, we had a gap of about 4 weeks, maybe five, where no one else got in. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know, I really want to be sure that whoever represent us has the deep conservative, rock-solid values that I do. And since I know Washington is a swamp, I know the challenges in going there, but I also know my positions. What kind of an example am I setting for my kids if I don't raise my hand to say I'm willing to serve?
When you said people jumped in without turning in signatures, they didn't have any petitions at all?
No, the first two people that announced they were running ended up at some point stopping and didn't turn in their candidate applications at all.
Oh, so they did not become candidates.
Correct.
And so at that point, you were wondering if there were going to be people who were running for the seat.
Exactly. Went through a really unusual time. Beyond those first two that jumped in the first week, it was a good 4 or 5 weeks before anyone else announced that they were running. And what I've learned since was going on is the normal people that would run would be our state representatives or our state senators. But because Illinois is losing so many people, everybody expects that when this next census comes out, we will lose one of our seats in the U.S. Congress. Thus, if my representative, for example, had gone for it and won, he would have been giving up his position in Springfield and fighting to help change Illinois to go to D.C. and in a year and a half to 2 years come home for re-election and more than likely be the junior of three Republicans than fighting over just two seats. So for that reason, those folks all decided not to go for it, which opened up a door for a guy who's on the school board to run for Congress. And I'm of the four candidates, I'm one of the only two who's ever served in public office.
And you're ready to run in a seat where possibly because of redistricting, you might end up being a one-term representative.
That's a very high possibility. I'm not that guy who is a career politician. I'm running because I think people need to be represented by statesmen who go to D.C., kind of like our original founders thought. Folks would go to the national capital, leave their farms and their businesses, go in for a few weeks or months to do the nation's business, and then go back home to their farms and businesses and families. If I win this and it turns out to be 2 years from now, I'm the junior running against two more experienced guys and don't have a hope of winning, that's fine. I've done my national service. I'm happy with that. If there's an opening and I'm enjoying what I'm doing and I'm making progress and making a difference, yeah, sure, I'm open to running again. But I don't think people need to be in D.C. forever. In fact, I've signed the term limits pledge.
Then the term limits pledge would get you out when anyway?
I believe that one is 6 years.
There have been candidates who got elected signing the term limits pledge who did not keep it.
Correct.
But you're going to keep it?
I don't have any intention to break it. I mean, truly, I don't think I'll back up. 20 years ago, people ask me about term limits, I was really not in favor of term limits at all. My reasoning was I was very worried we would end up in an environment where the congressperson was the figurehead and the machinery of people working and running the office becomes the permanent establishment who is running the national body, and the congressperson would just be an interchangeable person every so many years. We've gotten to the point now there where folks have been in D.C. for so long and appear to be losing a relation with the folks back home in their districts that I think it's time for term limits.
Well, you're running to succeed John Shimkus, fellow Republican, of course. What do you think of his priorities that he laid out in office? Would it be something you want to emulate, or would you be different in some ways?
I think in the main part, I'd be very similar to what Representative Shimkus has done. We both have Lutheran backgrounds. We both have a similar temperament. I think what he is known for is for having a very level head over the years and promoting good conservative policies. There's been some places where I've differed with him in most recent years, but frankly, it was the difference with the entire Republican leadership. You know, one of the things that drives me is for years and years, conservatives have sent new representatives to Congress only to find out after they get there that their direction changes. That's something I want to try to fix.
Which way have you seen the direction change, and tell me how you would differ from that?
Well, I'll give you the most classic example was on the last election cycle. Everybody was telling us they were going to repeal and replace Obamacare, right? We, to their surprise, elected Donald Trump. We held on to the Senate. And guess what? They weren't ready. There was no replacement Obamacare ready to go. And at that point, we had the House, too. So we had 2 years with all three branches of government. And our Republican leadership at that time, from a citizen standpoint, looked like they were too afraid to be too closely tied to Donald Trump and did not do the things that they told the electorate that they were going to do when we voted for them in 2016.
Well, let's move on to that topic. I want to know, what do you want to do in Congress? What should Congress do about health care in the U.S.? What are your priorities? Is it totally repealing the Affordable Care Act? And what do you replace it with?
Great questions. I think the best way to understand me is to know that I'm basically a Ronald Reagan conservative. He was the first president that I had the privilege of voting for as a young man. And so I've got the general viewpoint, like he did, that the federal government has overgrown and overreached what it was intended to do. We're spending $1 trillion a year now more than what we're taking in. That is absolutely not sustainable. Probably the biggest thing that I want to do is, in every way possible, how can we restrain the federal government so it doesn't reach so deeply into our lives? How can we continue doing what Trump is doing now, reducing regulations, keeping taxes low so that you and other families here at home can keep more of their money, grow their businesses, and thrive locally? After that, when you come to health care, Obamacare is so entrenched into life right now that I don't know that at this point it can ever be reversed, but it certainly has to be improved because it was supposed to get the people that were uninsured. We're supposed to be insured. Well, we have more people uninsured now than what we did when Obamacare was passed. That doesn't make any sense. The cost overruns are extreme. Everybody's seen their costs go up. We need to restore competitive markets back into place. Insurance companies should be able to compete across state lines. Different groups of consumers, be it businesses or different consumer groups, should be able to band together to go out as a group for group insurance to lower their premiums. All of these types of things are things that we should be looking at to bring costs back down. You know, the great thing about America is that we have the best healthcare system in the world. People around the world, if they have a problem that needs to be addressed, they come here to see our doctors. We can't ruin that by making it, to me, the worst case scenario of all is the Medicare for All idea. Because the only way those types of programs work, just like you see in Canada, is that you have to ration the care to the people, and then you end up waiting in line.
Well, we live in a time of partisan divides. If you're elected, how would you work on an issue like health care, or any issue for that matter, with Democrats in the House to get things done?
That is a great question, and it's something I think about a lot because what we haven't talked about is I grew up on a dairy farm. 19 years of my career have been in different facets of agriculture, as well as 10 years in financial services. And so one thing I'm very passionate about is working on agriculture, but as farmers, we're such a small part of the population that to get anything done, I as a Republican have to be able to reach across the aisle to other farm state Democrats to come up with solutions together on the next farm bill, for example. So as I'm a candidate, I've got a choice. You know, do I want to be a firebrand Republican just beating up Nancy Pelosi and all the others and casting all sorts of dispersions? Or do I want to take a kind of a middle ground where I really separate out the difference in our beliefs, the difference in the way we think the world should look, and the differences in our policies, but leaving that ground open so that me and a Democrat from, pick a state, Missouri or Arkansas, can sit down with each other over a cup of coffee and hammer out some places that we agree on policies regarding corn exports or cotton growing or the dairy program. We've got to be able to work together on things where we have common areas of interest.
Talking about agriculture, what are your priorities when it comes to that subject and for the farmers in the 15th District?
Well, the number one thing is that we have to grow our export market. The trade war has definitely hurt our exports without question. What's interesting, though, is I really agree, and I think most farmers do, that it was time that we deal with some of the trade imbalance. When I was a young man, I worked in exports, and when we would export products around the globe, but the Chinese had a different system. We couldn't just file the paperwork. We couldn't just send the health papers to China with the shipment. The state veterinarian from China got a free visit to the facilities in Ohio or Wisconsin. Yeah, maybe it was a free vacation for him, but really, he's there in the facilities learning how we do everything. What's really funny is all China would have to do is ask, hey, how can you help us improve this facet of agriculture? And we would have been sending our extension specialist overseas to help, no question. But their system required that they have that ability to gain knowledge just for us to do a shipment to them. So it was definitely time to straighten out our trade accords so that it was on a more fair basis. So, you know, I think most farmers right now understand that, even though we're taking it in the pocketbook really hard with the lack of exports. The new phase one deal looks really attractive. Hopefully China will carry through with their commitments on that. I think it's also important for us to realize that at some point this was coming down the pipeline anyway, because China only grows about 15% of the soybeans that they need. They're importing about 70% of their soybeans, and they were importing 60% of the U.S. crop. Well, just like if you're a manufacturer and you sell 60% of your products to Walmart, if you ever have a contract problem with Walmart, your company's in big trouble. American farmers are in the same boat. If we're exporting 60% of our soybeans to China, anything in the future that ever occurred, and we got to keep in mind, China has a 500-year goal of being the dominant player on the globe. At some point, this was going to be a problem regardless. So we have to work really hard to develop exports to other parts of the world so that we're not so heavily dependent on exports only to China.
Wanted to ask your thoughts on the economy, both the nation's economy and the economy in the 15th District. What's your take on the economy's performance? What do voters in the 15th District tell you?
I am amazed by the economy that we have right now. You know, unemployment levels for all different segments of society, whether that be folks in our district or African-Americans, Latinos, Asians, everybody, young people, everybody is at historically low unemployment. The percentage of people at work is 63%. Basically, if you want a job, you can probably find one right now. That's all great news. There was a number I heard out today, 93% of people are satisfied with where they're at in life at the moment. I've never heard that stat before. So that is all incredible. I'm blown away about, from the Ronald Reagan days, we know when you apply conservative values to the economy, it works every time it's tried, and it's working. So it's absolutely amazing. You know, we've got problems here in Illinois from our own, within the state, in that we're exporting so many people to the surrounding states. The population loss is incredible, so we definitely have to fix things here in the state, but we need to take cues from what's going on in Washington to do that rather than send our mismanagement to D.C.
So you say things are looking pretty good right now following the lead of, well, the Trump administration, its policies and what Congress has been doing?
Absolutely. I mean, any time that we can allow people to keep more of their own money to invest in their own communities, we're helping everybody.
Tell me something about an issue that's a priority for you, something we haven't talked about that you want to work on if you're elected.
Well, the number one thing is really agriculture, which we've already touched on. Something that is of interest to me, and I'll tell you fully right now, I do not yet have the answer to it. I'm very concerned about how we continue to hollow out agriculture. You know, you don't have to drive down the road very far to see more and more empty farms. the question mark for me is, when the next farm bill comes up, do we do what we generally have done, which is we tweak the old version of the farm bill to create the new version? That's a possibility. Or can we find some other ideas out there that we can bring in to help sustain the rural communities, to help keep more people on farms? You know, one of the things that really bothers me is the loss of not only individual farmers, but individual businesses as companies and farms too get larger and larger. You know, think about driving around the countryside when you were younger. Most of the houses you came by were a small business out there. You went into town and you saw Main Street lined by small businesses. The profits from that town then flowed through that business, and that business person would donate to their church. They'd donate to the Lions Club. They were involved in all these different things. As fewer and fewer people are their own entrepreneur running their own businesses, working somewhere else, we're seeing that loss. So we need to find ways to encourage that, like the youth programs such as CEO that developed in Effingham are great ways to establish that entrepreneurism. But we need to be able to support those types of programs and support ways in agriculture that we can support more people having a sustainable ongoing business that could be transferred through the family over the years.
So when you see farms going away, you're not talking about land going inactive or fallow. You're talking about local, smaller family farms and small businesses going away. The farmland may still be worked, but it's being worked by some larger corporate operation, which may be headquartered someplace else.
Yes on the first part, no on the second part. As we see farms get larger in size, they're still by and large family-owned. I think it's 97% or so of the farms in the country are still family-owned. But instead of me having my farm here and you're my brother and you having your farm a quarter mile down the road and a third brother is, or a sister is 2 miles over and they have their little business over there, as individuals can no longer compete at the scale because costs are going up, but what we get for our commodities is not. More and more people can't make ends meet, so they go work in town. That land then doesn't just sit fallow. Maybe you're the surviving farmer in the area, and you have your brother join you and you guys together farm together, but you get more and more acres under your umbrella. It's still family farms. It's just that fewer other families can still afford to farm on their own.
Are we getting to a point where only larger farms can make it, that you need that size and scale in order to be viable? And if so, what does that mean for local communities?
Well, we are. We're to the point that either if you don't have the means to grow, you work off the farm, so at least you have health insurance for your family, or you have enough income, and you turn into more or less a hobby farmer. Farming on the side, trying to make enough money to keep ends meeting while you farm the land and do what you love to do. Or you have the means to continue to add to your acreage and add to the farm because it just takes more bushels. It takes more acres when you're making fewer dollars of profit per acre or per bushel. Yeah, it's going back to what I was saying earlier, that as you reduce those numbers of businesses, be it a farm family or be it the local plumber, you just have less economic activity going on in town by the local folks who live and work there.
Well, Kerry Wolf, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about your candidacy.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's been a pleasure.